Bye.
So, how was your holidays?
They were very good, thank you. And I know we were going to try to get together before the end of the year. But somehow it just didn't work out. I mean, your social schedule, my God, demanding.
My social schedule?
Your social schedule.
Well, the holidays social schedule is, pretty tough for everybody, I would say.
That's true. And there was some travel involved for both of us. So
yeah.
We've been gone, so now we're back.
We've been gone. I went up to Northern Illinois to see my folks and my sister. My older sister, my younger sister, and the two kids didn't make it from South Carolina, but we had a great time, and I was worried because we did fly through, I flew through Chicago, and then took a little puddle jumper. Whenever you go to Chicago around the holidays.
That's a bad one.
It's just, a disaster waiting to happen, but I did good. No. 1.5 hour delay on the way out and 1 hour delay on the way in, but hey, that's better than, I've stayed the night before, gotten stranded, so... I was pretty happy with that.
Yeah, well, I did get stranded going to Hong Kong, so I wasn't so happy with that.
Well, that was for business, right?
That was for business, yep.
What happened?
We were late going out of Dallas, and so by the time we got to San Francisco, Cathay wouldn't let us on the plane, even though we got to the gate 20 minutes prior, and they said they had called ahead and told American we weren't getting on, but American didn't tell us that, so we ran through the airport.
Wow.
A group of 23 people not getting on. So we had to wait 12 hours for the next flight, and then it was delayed 2 hours. So, oh well. What are you going to do?
Were you pretty happy about that?
Yeah, I felt really good, especially since I was planning on sleeping those 12 hours.
Well, every time Gretchen comes over, she looks at my new Apple Mac.
Mm-hmm.
What do you iMac? I was kind of trying to think, what do they call it? They call that darn thing.
Computer.
The iMac, and she's like, I'm going to get me one of those now that,
I'm going to get me one.
Well, did you see the Macworld they had last week?
Yeah, I know it was going on. What was the big announcement?
So we got some new announcements. I wanted to share them with you.
Uh-huh.
We now have video rentals on iTunes.
Oh, that's right. Yep.
And you know what? I have to say that's smart because there's... I would never buy a movie on iTunes. I'm just not that kind of guy, to buy a movie and... I don't know. I just don't buy movies anyways. But I rent movies, and I could see myself potentially renting a movie on iTunes. But I got a trick. Already the bloggers have figured out how to cheat this. So what you can do, and I don't know if I'll get in trouble for saying this, but apparently you can only watch your movie for 24 hours once you have started playing it, okay? But clever hackers have developed a simple loop in Apple's system which allows you to rent movies and keep them with plenty of time to watch them. So what you do is you change the time of your computer clock, set your computer clock to the year 2009, for example, then begin to play the movie, then set the clock back. You'll have a whole year to watch the movie if you do that. Pretty simple hack.
That is really bad. You going to do that, Jeff? Have you already done it?
Does it work? No. I mean, the thing is, I watch movies. I hardly rent movies anyways, but I watch movies on TV, and this isn't going to get it to the TV. I'm not going to sit here and watching it on the Mac. I could.
You could.
Not a bad screen, but I don't have any comfortable chairs in here.
Right.
I'm not going to watch a movie on my iPhone, probably. It just seems silly. The only thing I was thinking is...
Unless you're stuck in an airport for 14 hours, it might be a really good idea.
And that's the only thing I was thinking, exactly. When you're portable out and, But they made some additions to the iPhone, and I'll talk about those later. They had the big announcement was a thin laptop called the MacBook Air. Have you heard of that?
Air.
It
A-I-R.
Is tiny. So Steve Jobs comes out. He's got a manila envelope. He pulls it out of the manila envelope. It's that thin.
Oh, wow.
It is, 12.8 inches wide, 9 inches deep, weighs 3 pounds, and its thickness is between 0.16 and 0.76 inches.
Wow.
So it's 3 pounds. It really doesn't have any kind of accessories to it. It's got a built-in webcam, full-sized black keyboard. The keyboard is actually backlit. It's got a big trackpad that sort of does the same kind of motions you can do with two fingers to move things in and out like you can on the iPhone. You probably haven't seen that, but that's kind of a cool interface thing. There's no internal optical drive. So you have nothing. You can't play CDs. You have nothing. You can't load software. I couldn't have loaded my music software onto the MacBook Pro. But apparently you can network it if you already have a Mac or something that has an optical drive. They did it to make it small, you know? You can't replace the battery. It's kind of like the iPod now where you have to take it to Apple to get that replaced. It's only got one USB port. So that's got some limitations to it.
And how much is it?
Well, it's there's two versions that they're making. One is a 1.6 gigahertz processor, and that is $1,800. And there's a 1.8 gigahertz, and that is $3,100. Wow. So they are not cheap for laptops.
Wow, yeah.
Not cheap at all. But Greenpeace has totally said this is a great computer.
Really?
Because every part on it, they actually designed it to be totally recyclable. Where apparently, and I don't know about the history, but I guess Apple and Greenpeace had problems before.
Interesting.
So go figure that.
How exciting.
Yeah. I think that is exciting.
That is. Yeah. They always make their own news. Yeah.
They always make their own news. I just can't imagine, really, people buying the MacBook Air. It's just so much more expensive than a normal laptop. And you don't.
With quite a few limitations, it sounds like.
The one USB port really gets me because, boy, USB ports just get used up easily. Yeah, do you hear what's going on back there? We got a little fire engine action going on. I hope it's not the house.
Yeah, I guess we'll find out.
I guess we'll find out soon.
If it gets louder.
If it's the studio fire, it's the heat of the show, folks. But I don't know who's going to buy one. I would still, even though I love my Mac, I would still buy a regular laptop.
Mm-hmm.
It's just...
Yeah,
too much limitations for me, I think. But, you know, maybe it's a paradigm. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's a paradigm shift. But it is awful expensive. So.
That was it out of Macworld?
That was it out of Macworld. There's a bunch of iPhone updates. And I did pull some articles. There was one update I wanted to tell you about.
Oh. You still liking your iPhone?
Yeah, I do. I do a lot. Biggest problem I've got with it, in fact, this was actually a complaint with the MacBook Air as well, is that Apple's really not gunning for the enterprise yet. And the problem I've got with the iPhone is it's not compatible with Microsoft Exchange the way most corporations use Microsoft Exchange. So I can't get my work email on my iPhone.
No.
And I knew I couldn't going in.
Uh-huh.
Now, we have a web interface, and I can use the iPhone's web interface to get my work email. And that's okay. And it's not great. But so that's the problem. And Apple's going to need to fix that. And I think they will eventually. But that's also the same problem that they said that the MacBook Air is. I guess I can't remember the name, the Air, the small notebook, is that it's really more of a home laptop just because of its lack of a lot of peripherals.
Mm.
And the enterprise needs more.
Mm.
So, but this is really cool. So I know you're a big GPS person.
Yes.
You have you live and die by GPS.
Uh-huh.
All right. So what Apple did is they said, okay, you know what? We can figure out where you are by cell phone towers.
Okay.
You know, just like they do in the CSI.
Mm-hmm.
And so I tried it, and it pinpoints my house, like plus or minus about a mile radius. Kind of useful, but kind of gimmicky.
Kind of not useful, though.
Yeah, it depends on what you're using it for.
If somebody was really trying to find you and they were within a mile.
Yeah, I know.
Well, that's not going to help.
But so you know what I did? I, just for the heck of it, just for fun, I turned on the Wi-Fi, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then I did the search again, and it could tell I was in the backyard.
Wow.
Now, I just couldn't believe it. I was like, is this an accident? Does it have something to do with the Wi-Fi? So because I didn't do any research on it. So I went and did research, and what I found just amazed me. There is, what happens is the iPhone, just like your computer, when you turn it on looking for Wi-Fi, it'll find every signal that's available to your computer, right? And internally, it knows the certain address. There's like a identifier called a MAC. And it knows the strength. Okay. Now it doesn't even have to hook up to any of those, but it's got all this information. So then what it does, just like the cell phone towers, it takes a reading of which Wi-Fi connections it's looking for and the strength of it and figures out where you are. And it is unbelievably accurate. In fact, I think they said it's plus or minus 20 meters, which a GPS is plus or minus 10 meters.
Wow.
So
that is amazing.
It's amazing. But you may ask what I asked myself. I don't understand. How does the system know where Jeff's Wi-Fi is?
Yeah.
How would it know that? You know how it knows? I'm going to tell you how it knows.
No, I don't. I'm sitting here going, I don't know.
So there's this company called Skyhook, and they provide this, what they call the Wi-Fi positioning system. They're supplying it to Apple. They have cars that go on all the city streets constantly, just drive by in alleyways and every place else, and they've got computers on board that detect these signals and figures out where they are.
Huh.
Isn't that amazing?
And then what do they do with it?
Well,
that's the information they feed.
That's the information they feed into the Wi-Fi positioning system. So they're selling their technology to lots of different
wow.
people.
Hmm.
I don't know if it's a competition with GPS, but it's a very unique thing.
So is that how the GPS works on the iPhone?
That is how the GPS works on the iPhone.
Wow.
So when I turn the Wi-Fi off, it works using cell towers.
Oh, it's not and that's why it's not accurate.
Yeah. Right. When I put the Wi-Fi on, it's very
accurate. It could be a car sitting in the backyard or back
yeah.
alley.
Yeah. I mean, I could tell. I intentionally moved to the front of the house to the back of the house. It knew.
Wow.
I find it phenomenally
amazing
technology.
Yeah.
Now, on the second side of that is, after all the whiz bang cool stuff, I honestly don't know what I'll ever use it for. I don't
talk about on the podcast. Podcast topic.
This is a podcast topic. But Gretchen, I always know where I am. You know, and I think most people do. And most of the time we're at work or we're at home or we're at a few places.
Yes, and
that's when it would be very useful, right?
Right.
And so I kind of figured out, okay, when have I been lost in the past? And I've probably been lost. I'm not saying I have great geographical skills. I'm just saying I'm a map guy and I typically know where I am.
Yeah.
I've gotten lost maybe once every 2 or 3 years. So this technology, if I have my cell phone with me, will be wonderful.
Once every 2 or 3 years.
Well, maybe I am an anomaly. But I kind of don't think so. So this technology obviously costs money, and Apple paid. I don't pay extra for it, but Apple paid Skyhook for use of the technology.
That's why you paid $500 for your phone.
I guess so.
Because all those little cars driving around with gas, you know, $3.50 a gallon.
Absolutely.
There you go.
Absolutely.
Really good for the environment, too. So you can know where you are.
God, I know.
Can you imagine?
I mean, they're selling this technology to all kinds of other players, obviously. I'm not quite sure exactly who. I'm trying to look. Oh. So I went to Skyhook's website, and I saw that they have applications to be a driver. So let me just...
Do you want to be a driver for Skyhook?
I think you should. I think you should. But I love this job description. I mean, this sounds great. Listen to this. Do you like to drive? Want to intimately know the streets and hoods of your own hometown? Skyhook will pay you to literally drive each and every single street in cities and towns across the United States, Canada, and abroad. Become an expert on every highway and byway, from fancy boulevards to back alleys. Oh, the places you'll go and the sights you'll see. All you need is drive, and Skyhook will provide the rest. What I love about that is, oh, the places you'll go. You're going up and down in the streets. It sounds like, you know, being a flight attendant. Well, then you really do see some places. So here's your responsibilities. As a Skyhook driver, you will be using your Wi-Fi scanning device to passively gather wireless information to specific territories assigned to you by Skyhook. These contract positions typically last 2 to 4 weeks. There are no stops required, just driving and letting the device scan. All drivers must have a valid license, insurance, and a car in good working order.
Oh, you take your own car. Oh, my Lord.
Yes.
Oh.
So get your maps, your shades, some snacks, and your tunes ready for a driving experience you're not likely to forget. If you think you have what it takes to be a Skyhook driver, please complete the online application and you'll be contacted. So...
It's the second career in this for you, Jeff. I see it coming. You're so fascinated with the technology.
Oh, the places I'll see, Gretchen.
Oh, the tunes you can listen to.
The boulevards and the sidewalks. Oh, how boring that would be.
Oh,
this doesn't sound boring. It sounds like exciting.
Oh, the travel. You're part of the travel industry, I guess. Right?
I wonder if I get business cards. But the reason I was intrigued about the driver positions is because I wanted to kind of know how this works.
Well, they
so they have people that...
It seems so inefficient, though, doesn't it?
It seems so inefficient to me, too.
It seems so old-fashioned and inefficient and
here's the deal.
It's unbelievably expensive right now.
Unbelievably expensive to do all this. Uh-huh. And what I'm telling you is I think it's really cool technology that I
for
don't
what?
Find useful.
Yeah, for what?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
I mean, when I got, I was excited because I heard, you know, the announcement of this is going to be added to the iPhone. I couldn't wait to play with it. And I played with it for a little bit and thought it was nifty cool.
But
and now I don't need it.
So what? You'd rather have saved $100, right?
Well, I didn't pay for it. I mean, that's the great thing about the iPhone or phones like that.
You did pay for it. You know you paid for it. It's in the cost of the product.
Yeah, but that was like a year ago. I mean, this is half a year ago.
Oh, you mean this is so new?
I just got this delivered. That's the thing about the... You get all these updates with iPhone.
Oh, this is a new update.
Yeah. It was free. I mean... Well,
but they had to have known a year ago they were going to do this, though.
Well, that probably was a potential, yeah.
Yeah. So they probably built that little... You're paying for all those little people driving all over the country, street by street.
Now, how do you know their size?
That's true. They could be big people.
But what else did I get? I also got a cool way to add little web icons to my homepage. I got a cool way to I can send multiple SMS messages to multiple people now. That doesn't matter that much. So anyway, that is the one compelling thing that is kind of fun about the iPhone. You get excited when there's updates, and there's been updates every 2 or 3 months, and you get new stuff. It's
like
kind of cool.
Like a kid in a candy store.
No, it's kind of cool, you know? What phone does that?
Mine doesn't.
I know. You got the same phone you bought.
Mine was $39. There you go.
Well, mine,
and
mine's
cute and small. But
mine's
yours
cooler.
Does a whole different thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Come fly with me. Let's fly. Let's fly away. If you can use some exotic booze, there's a bar in far Bombay. Come fly with me, let's fly away. Come fly with me, let's float down to Peru. In Llama Land, there's a one-man band, and he'll toot his flute for you.
So what have you been thinking about or looking at lately?
Well, let's see. I got some stuff from 2007, which I think was kind of so long ago. My God, 20 days ago. So you heard about the top quotes from 2007?
No, I haven't.
You didn't?
No.
Well, let's just recap what happened in 2007.
Let's recap, shall we? A little time capsule.
The number one quote in 2007. Don't tase me, bro.
Really?
Yeah.
Is that from a movie?
That's
or?
From the Florida college student removed by when he was interrupting the speech by John Kerry.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. There you go.
Oh, that's funny.
That was compiled by the editor of the Yale Book of Quotations, number one. Okay, so see if you can remember where the rest of these quotes came
from.
See if you can guess.
Guess.
Number two, I personally believe that U.S. Americans are unable to do so because some people out there in our nation don't have maps. Do you remember who that was?
That sounds like that Miss America or beauty pageant winner.
Miss Teen America contest, Laura Upton, who got confused and mangled the response to the question about why 1/5 of Americans can't locate the U.S. on a map.
Right.
That's so frightening.
Yeah.
Number three.
Hey, I just want to intercept there. You know, if you think that we're a dumb country, just remember that Hillary Clinton was losing New Hampshire, and then she cried, and then she won. So, you know, we're not a smart country. We are an interesting one, though.
Well, and also, Ron Paul finished second in Nevada. Frightening.
Oh, did he?
That was actually frightening.
I think it was more frightening than Huckabee won anything.
I know. Well, yeah.
That guy is...
It is. There is some scary stuff going on, which I'm sure we'll talk about.
Yeah.
The third most memorable quote from last year. In Iran, we don't have homosexuals like in your country.
Oh, yeah. I won't even try to say his name, but I know who said that.
Ahmadinejad, Mr. President.
Denial is a river.
another famous one. That's some nappy-headed hoes there. Mr. Imus.
Was that the actual quote?
That was the actual quote. That's some nappy-headed hoes there.
Wow. It's hard to imagine that would be considered
That wasn't
bad.
Number one. Surprisingly, that wasn't number one. Number five, another famous one, I don't recall. How many times can you say that
to members
of Congress, former Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez?
Yeah, I don't recall.
I don't recall. This, I thought, was a brilliant one by one of your favorite people. There's only three things he, Republican presidential candidate and former New York Mayor Rudy Giuliani, mentions in a sentence. A noun, a verb, and 9/11.
9/11, yeah. Oh, is that Bill Maher?
No, that was Senator Joe Biden.
Oh, Biden.
I thought that was great. Another good one. I'm not going to get into a name-calling match with somebody who has a 9% approval rating. That was Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid about VP Dick Cheney.
Oh, that's funny. I never heard that one.
Another one you're going to know in a heartbeat. I have a wide stance when going to the bathroom.
Oh, God.
Idaho representative. Idaho Republican Senator Larry,
which is
Craig.
Funny if you look back 20 years ago, but that quote would ever be in the news for anything.
Right, for anything.
I have a wide stance when I go to the bathroom.
Why his toes touched. Well, another one from Joe Biden. I mean, you got the first mainstream African American who is articulate and bright and clean and a nice looking guy. I mean, that's a storybook, man.
Oh, yeah.
Joe Biden, come
on. Yeah, yeah.
Whoa.
I'll tell you, Biden is as smart as a whip, but boy, when that mouth gets going, you don't know what's going to come out.
That is true, which is why he has dropped out.
Yep.
Right? And the last most memorable quote, I think as far as the adverse impact on the nation around the world, this administration's has been the worst in history. That would be from former President Jimmy Carter about the Bush administration.
Oh, okay.
Yep. So, yeah, when you think back, those are all pretty famous.
Well, I've got some 2007 lookbacks.
Okay.
Let's go back, shall we?
Yes, since we're taking a stroll down memory lane.
A stroll down memory lane.
20 years ago, or 20 days ago.
20 days ago. All right. I've got the top 10 buzzwords.
Oh, yes.
For 2007.
I know what the number one is.
Do you? Uh-huh. What is it?
Subprime.
No.
No. Actually.
Oh, that's a good one, though. Well, this must be from a different
list.
This
was a different source. Yeah, subprime was number one.
Oh, yeah. That's a good one, yeah. Because no one ever heard that before.
It was totally, yeah, it totally came out of the blue, and now we all know what that is.
And now all of our savings is like nil. All right, number 10 is freegan. It's a combination of the words free and vegan. The term describes an anti-consumer who shares mainstream materialism, or who shuns mainstream materialism and only makes purchases as a last resort. Freegan.
Freegan. I've not heard that.
I've heard it, but I can't remember the context exactly, because I am a freegan, as you can tell. Vajayjay. It's a Vajayjay. Maybe it's Vajayjay. It's Vajayjay. How can we possibly write about this in a dignified way? Well, it's funny, foolish slang for vagina. The term popularized in Grey's Anatomy, which I've never watched, and more recently by Oprah Winfrey. So Vajayjay.
Yeah, it would have to be that.
Vajayjay, yeah. Right. Have you ever heard that?
No, but isn't that the movie that's
Vajayjay.
Out now?
Oh, Vajayjay, it probably is.
Yeah, Vajayjay.
Vajayjay. Don't be looking my Vajayjay!
Quoting Britney Spears.
What are you looking at? That's my Vajayjay. So next year's buzzwords, we definitely got to probably have one for the guys.
Yeah, that's right. You know. You'll get your own.
We'll get our own.
Penis.
Number 8 is bacon, but it's spelled BACN. This covers news alerts and other email that individuals signed up to receive but may never get around to actually reading. Oh, I have a lot of that, actually. I sign up for it. I never get a bacon, much like the pork product it's named after. Bacon is something we desire, even though it clogs our electronic arteries.
That's cute.
Locavore. And, this is a semi-green term. The New Oxford American Dictionary's word of the year, locavore. This term refers to the trend of eating fresh, locally grown ingredients. Ah, locavore.
Okay.
That makes sense.
Locavore.
We talked about that in the podcast, how it's really cool to try to eat locally.
That's right. We did.
I typically will eat here in Dallas.
Every night. Because you're not flying out.
So I'm a locavore. Number six, grass station. And this is in Webster's New World Dictionary word of the year. The term does not describe an outpost for smoking marijuana. I know what you're thinking. It's a theoretical alternative to today's fossil fuel-based gas station. So.
Oh, it's a grass station. Oh.
A grass station.
Like where you get ethanol.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, that makes sense.
Number five is the Colbert bump. So this is the boost in popularity ratings that a political candidate gets after appearing on the Colbert Report. So Ron Paul, stunning 100% increase in horse polls from 1 to 2% in June.
But he finished 13% in Nevada.
Exactly. Number four is the popcorn lung. Do you know what
that
is?
Oh, yes. From the guy who ate the popcorn, microwave popcorn.
Yes.
Oh.
Yeah. Wayne Watson, who ate approximately 2 bags of microwave popcorn a day for 10 years. Oh, poor guy. I love popcorn, but I realized that.
Pretty quickly,
I don't eat the microwave stuff. No trans fat for me.
Okay.
Number three, previvor. This is a person who does not have cancer but has precancerous cells or a genetic mutation that increases the risk for it. And he's a pre-survivor.
Oh,
so
all right. Previvor. All right.
Number two, surge. This is, of course, the influx of the 20,000 U.S. troops to Iraq. Even if you don't know the specific details, the word itself has by now been drilled relentlessly into your head.
Right.
Is a surge working? Is a surge right. failing?
Kind of like the sub run.
Yeah, surge. Mm-hmm. So, number one, drum roll, please.
Yeah.
Johnny in the studio, could you give us a drum roll? Johnny? I don't know why I came up with that name. Number one is cougar, which is what you are.
Oh, yeah.
No, Gretchen.
Yes,
Gretchen is
cougar.
Not a cougar.
Yeah, right. I'm a cougar.
Do you know what a cougar
yes,
is?
Yes, I do know what a cougar is. It's an older single woman on the make. Right?
On the make for a younger guy,
younger
specifically.
Guy. A specifically younger guy. Oh,
yes.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. So, I thought it was just
example. Demi Moore with Ashton
Kutcher.
Kutcher.
But they got married though, so
well,
she
still.
Can't be a cougar anymore, right?
Well,
because I thought you had to be single to be a cougar.
Well, the definition here is just an older woman who romantically pursues younger men. So that's a good question. If you're married, are you no longer a cougar?
You're a reformed cougar.
Yeah, I wonder. So anyway, that's what a cougar is.
Well, I think subprime was a little more apropos than cougar, but.
Yeah, I think so too, actually.
Mm-hmm. So anyway.
You must have been reading more intellectual magazines than I was.
Cougar.
I've got Cougar and Vajayjay.
Yes, you do. Mine has Subra. Oh, man. Hey, speaking of the surge, you know what I saw? Remember in 2003, remember when we invaded Iraq that there was we were a part of a coalition of countries who invaded Iraq? Remember that?
Big coalition.
Big coalition.
We were not going it alone. That's
no,
for
we
sure.
weren't going it alone. So there were 47,000 other combat troops from three different nations in 2003. Then in 2004, there were 24,000 troops from 33 countries. So today, there are less than 12,000 troops. And that includes 4,500 British troops, 2,000 from the Soviet Republic of Georgia, and 1,200 from South Korea.
Hmm.
And what's really bad is that by next year, Britain's going to be half. South Korea is going to be half. Georgia's pulling out. Australia and Poland have promised that they're going to remove all of their troops. So the coalition, as of next year, is going to be down to 6,000 troops. And there's 160,000 U.S. troops there. And of those, there's been 4,200 deaths. Well, more than 4,200 deaths. 28,000 wounded. And of those deaths, 3,900 have been Americans. 174 have been Brits. And this is where it gets really interesting. 33 have been Italians, and 22 have been from Poland.
Well, let's call this coalition what it really is. It's a symbolic coalition.
It was totally symbolic.
It's not anything to do with
and you know who the member-
real or meaningful. And
some
I don't mean
the-
to put down this coalition countries
right.
for that. They're just playing along with the game that we've—
El Salvador, yeah, and Estonia, and Fiji. Fiji lost one person in this war. Hungary, South Korea, Latvia, the Netherlands, Romania, Spain.
Wow.
Thailand.
I never heard about those countries.
In all those years. Yeah. But these are people who have lost troops, fatalities since the war started.
Mm-hmm.
But don't worry, they're all going to be gone next year. We're going to be down to 6,000 doing it ourselves.
So if Thailand pulls out, I can't.
I think it's done.
I think
Iraq is done.
Iraq is so 2006. You know what I mean? It's like, I'm on to bigger and better things.
Yeah, well, it's the economy, stupid, right?
Oh man, that economy. We lost 5% just last week on the S&P. That's, you know, wow.
In 2008 is not off to a good year.
No,
it?
So far.
Are we still
it's
on 2007? Okay.
Yeah, sorry. We're still on. No, I'm not. I'm on to 2008, and I didn't want to mention. I started 2008. Flying, I think, 3 business trips already to Houston. Anyways, I have been flying from Love Field into Hobby.
Yes.
And I just wanted to express my love.
For Love Field?
For Love Field and for Houston Hobby. Both of those airports, they get busy, so you got to feel like you're in the middle of a place that's kind of cool. But both airports are very 60s retro and cool.
Yeah.
Cool beyond belief and very easy. Well, what's really impressive is in both of those airports, when you actually get into your airplane, it leaves and it only sits on the runway or the ramp for less than 5 minutes. And same thing when you come in.
Yep.
You know, how a DFW, you taxi forever.
Yeah.
And then you get to your gate and, of course, it's filled.
It's filled.
And so you wait for more. Yeah. And in 3 minutes, you're walking out with your bag.
Right. That's right. It is pretty quick.
I love the look and feel of the airports. I feel very comfortable. It just reminds me.
Have you noticed the floor
somehow of,
at Love? The floor at Love?
Yeah.
The mosaic?
Yes.
It's beautiful mosaic. It's really very pretty.
I love that floor. Mm-hmm. And it's got like a world map and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I the same juices flow that made me love the airline business.
Jeff's reminiscing here.
I am reminiscing. I really
He's a former airline executive.
I really love those places.
Wow,
they're special and they're convenient. You know, serves both things. And yeah, that mosaic is really really nice.
It was nice. Yeah.
What was the other thing I wanted to say about that? Oh, so going to Houston, 2 trips have been a day trip. 1 trip was overnight, but I didn't check bags either way. And it was just like going to the office, pretty much. It was
very
so easy.
Yeah, it's like an hour before you can walk through security and everything. You know, definitely make it. Everything's fine.
Yeah,
yeah. The biggest
there's
complaint,
a friendly vibe there too. That's
the biggest complaint at Love is there's not enough places to eat, especially early in the morning. It takes a really
I don't have
long
a
time.
Problem with that. They do have a McDonald's and they do have a
but that takes a really long
Chili's.
Time. The line is really long.
Yeah,
yeah.
They had a Chili's. I got a
they
burger
could use
there.
Some more.
They could use some more. What my only complaint is there's no Starbucks.
Uh-oh.
In fact, I don't think there was a Starbucks at Hobby either, which is really weird.
You better know. Call up the Starbucks execs and tell them where they need to be.
How can Love not have a Starbucks? They may have one, maybe just not in Southwest Terminal. But there's no Starbucks there. I've been there 3 times, and I've looked. Trust me.
I'm thinking, too. I've been flying it a lot, too. Maybe on the other side, because Southwest you go to the left,
right.
Maybe to the right.
No, I've been...
You've been down there, too?
Yeah, I've been down there.
Oh, okay. All right.
I've been looking.
You've been looking. Okay.
So I just wanted to profess my love to the folks that manage Love Field and Hobby Airport in Southwest. Keep it going.
All right.
It's a good thing you guys got going.
Okay, so, you know, I have so many stories about Dallas, I can't even begin. Where do I start?
Wow.
It's unbelievable.
Really?
But You know what Dallas has been in the news for lately? National media this
subprime?
Past week. No, not subprime. Well, national yeah, subprime. Media. That's another one.
Cheese?
Stephenville.
Oh,
Stephenville,
yeah.
Stephenville, boy. Woo. The UFO experts have descended because UFOs have descended.
The UFOs are coming. You know what I think is funny about this whole thing?
What?
Actually, why don't you... Okay. Do you want to go through the story of what it is first? Because some of our listeners may not be aware.
Objects in the sky sighted by many, many folks in Stephenville on January 8th. And it was reported in the Stephenville Empire Tribune. And Stephenville is what? How far south of Fort Worth?
It looks like about an hour southwest of Fort Worth.
Yeah, it's not that far from here. It's part of the Metroplex, as we call it here. Right?
Okay, I had a guy in my office say that his girlfriend saw some lights that night.
Uh-huh.
From Dallas.
Uh-huh.
All right, so, you know.
Right.
It's getting a little crazy.
Right.
He was serious, okay?
Oh, God. Well, the Stephenville Empire Tribune reported it, and then the next thing you know, the story was picked up again and again and again, and every major news network has run stories about the lights near Stephenville. Two witnesses have appeared on Larry King Live, and Mutual UFO Network, known as MUFON.
Is that like a cable station or something?
No, MUFON, the Mutual UFO Network, which founded in 1969 and has chapters all over the U.S., has now descended on Stephenville to interview people who saw these mystery lights. More than 200 people have formally filed their stories.
Okay, now I just want to say one thing, though.
Mm-hmm.
This is just an observation about it. Is apparently this thing was in the air for a while.
Yes.
That's what every observer has said.
Right.
How many pictures of it have you seen?
I saw that one grainy cell phone video.
So you did see one?
Yes.
See, I haven't seen anything. And that's what...
They've been showing that a lot.
How can nobody have taken a picture with all the cameras around?
But there was one guy.
Very suspicious.
There was one guy. So, they're going to MUFON is going to take a scientific approach, and they are certified official investigators. And over the next few months, they're going to follow up on the witnesses and produce a report about any patterns they find in the accounts. In the meantime, the locals are having fun with the story. People came out to the meeting with tinfoil on their heads, as they typically do.
I think this is great for Stephenville because, I mean... The hotels and the restaurant business, they just got to be loving this.
They are.
They are. Are you scared?
No.
No, I'm not either.
No, I'm not scared.
I'm not either. And one pilot I heard was interviewed.
Yeah.
And he said he saw something from his aircraft.
Right.
And he explained it. He said, I think this is a military jet dropping flares.
That's what they... Yeah.
For whatever that means.
That's right. They do say that a lot, that it's military and flares. This one guy, I don't know if it's the same pilot, he's a 50-year-old pilot, he says that he saw a set of glowing objects moving quickly and silently towards town. The light changed configurations from horizontal line to two vertical lines, passed over the town, got brighter, and vanished. The entire episode took 3 minutes. Then he saw a set of lights pursued by two military jets.
Yeah, I heard that too. Yeah.
Right. And then somebody else thought that they saw a giant airplane headed for the airport. They didn't see any flashing lights, but they thought they saw two enormous metal plates stuck together, a classic flying saucer appearance. It hovered, backed up, and was gone. So some of the similarities are it seems like it just disappears.
Flying saucer.
Yeah, there you go.
No, it makes me laugh just because of the name. It sounds so 1950s.
I know, flying saucer.
And little green men.
Well, something.
There has been strange people.
Something.
I've heard that there's been a group of two-headed people, alien-looking people, hanging out at Stephenville in the diner there. They don't talk to the locals.
I think they're upset because there's no Starbucks in Stephenville.
What? Okay, if you're aliens.
Why Stephenville?
Why Stephenville?
I know.
I mean, come on.
I know. I agree.
why do we love this stuff so much? See, I think if the aliens come, it's going to be more like that movie. Was it Independence Day?
Yes. Where they're coming.
They're just going to come.
They're not going to be happy.
They're just going to come and be done with us.
Well, what's the new one that's out now that raked in $41 million?
Oh, that's supposed to be a good movie.
That's supposed to be really good.
Yeah. In fact, somebody I know just saw it.
Oh, what is it called? Somethingville.
I can't remember it now.
Oh.
Yeah, it's supposed to be good. Well, I wanted to share something a little bit cultural.
Oh, okay.
Before we go back on to Dallas, so.
Yeah, Dallas strike is up so the, interesting.
Strike
I
up
mean,
the
UFO wasn't cultural, Jeff? Come on.
Strike up the classical music. All right. My mom will be glad I mentioned this anyways. And I'd like to make mom happy because, you know, she is our only listener.
Hi, Jeff's mom.
You can call her Diane.
Listener number one, I think. See?
How pathetic is that? I do an internet show. My mom likes it. Will you go out with me?
I bet that's a big hook. Get you lots of dates.
So, no, it was very cute. So, my younger sister, Jennifer, is down in Greenville, South Carolina. They don't get a lot of snow down there. She's got three young kids. So, they had a pretty big snowstorm recently.
Mm-hmm.
The kids came out, and they built these cool snowmen, right? And they're pretty cool. They had a lot of fun. Big, fun day. So, the snowmen, so she sent pictures out. And the snow pretty much melted the next day. And you know how, you've been up north. So you build a snowman and the snow all melts.
Right.
The still, you got the little remaining sort of skeleton of the snowman there.
Right. A sad little representation of him.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. A sad little representation.
Yeah.
And so Jennifer sends the photo with the title of the email, Ozymandias. You know what Ozymandias is?
No.
Well, I didn't either.
I had to look it up.
I had to go
did
wiki
it. Did you think it was spam?
Yes, I did. I thought it was like something to do with Ozzy Osbourne. And it does. No, it doesn't. So I want to share it with the audience. Ozymandias is actually a poem by a guy named Percy Shelley from 1818.
Yeah. Okay, he's famous.
He is famous. Mm-hmm. And this is one of his most famous short poems. So I'm going to read it to you. This is actually quite nice. I met a traveler from an antique land who said, two vast and trunkless legs of stone stand in the desert, near them on the sand. Half sunk, a shattered visage. Is it visage?
V-I-S-A-G-E.
Yeah, how do you say that word?
It's not visage.
Visage, maybe that's it. Half sunk, a shattered visage lies, whose frown and wrinkled lip and sneer of cold command. Tell that its sculptor well those passions red, which yet survive, stamped on those lifeless things, the hand that mocked them and the heart that fed. And on this pedestal, these words appear. My name is Ozymandias, King of Kings. Look on my works, ye mighty, and despair. No things besides remains. Round in the deep decay of that colossal wreck, boundless and bare, the lone and level sands stretch far away. So what he's doing here is describing an old ruin that was made by a great man, or people that admired this great man.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason Jennifer thought about it, because she had read it in high school. I don't remember reading it in high school. And it made her very sad.
Aww.
In high school. And Aww. That's what the snowman reminded Aww. Her of, because he said it's a very sad remnant.
Mm-hmm. It is a sad remnant.
And so anyway, it was fascinating, because I went on to Wikipedia, read a little bit more about this poem, and let me just read a quick paragraph about the interpretation of it. The central theme of Ozymandias is mankind's hubris. In 14 short lines, Shelley condenses the history of not only Ozymandias' rise, peak, and fall, but also that of an entire civilization. Without directly stating it, Shelley shows that all works of humankind, including power structures and government, eventually must pass into history.
Yep.
So no matter how permanent they may seem at the apex of their influence, Ozymandias' short-sighted pride seems amusing at first until the reader realizes that the lessons conveyed are equally applicable today. All things must pass.
Must pass, right.
Close my eyes, only for a moment, and the moment's gone. All my dreams pass before my eyes, a curiosity, dust in the wind. All they are is dust in the wind. Same old song, just a drop of water in an endless sea.
Oh. That's what people are saying about the United States now, that we're in our downward pass.
We haven't had a long peak.
No.
It really hasn't been long.
It's usually not more than 200 years. And then,
well, the Roman Empire did a lot better than that, though, didn't they?
Yeah, didn't they?
They kicked butt.
Yeah, for quite some time, but then it does pass.
It does pass.
Is decay, and some professors were citing that we're sort of in a decay period now.
You know,
that there's internal strife, and we're not happy as a people, and we're not putting our money and our energy where it needs to be progressive. And
I was at a happy hour with five, I think it was five women.
That sounds like where you'd be, Jeff.
Three weeks ago. Well, they're just friends, but we got into an argument, you know, and we were talking about superpowers, and I made the comment, it's like, well, you know, I'm not sure it's that important for America in particular to be a superpower always. And they just looked at me like with disbelieving eyes, like I had said that I was a Martian going to Stephenville, you know. they said, why wouldn't you want America to always be a – why shouldn't America to be always be a superpower? And my argument was, don't get me wrong, I like living in a superpower.
Mm-hmm.
And I definitely, if there is going to be a superpower, I want it to be a superpower that's got morality.
Mm-hmm.
And I think,
right. And not
despite our leadership right now in some efforts, I think we are moral people.
Because at one point, Nazi Germany was a superpower.
Right.
And that was not a good thing.
That was not a good thing.
Yeah,
exactly. I don't know if they were really a world superpower, though.
Well, they're
regional player.
Dreams of being.
Yeah, but nevertheless. So, yeah, I definitely want to work
hard. Well, actually, it was worldwide. It went everywhere around the world.
Yeah,
it really did.
Yeah, the fascism sort of.
It touched the Pacific. It touched Africa. Yeah. It was touching the United States.
Yeah.
It was coming close.
Yeah.
Touched Alaska.
Yeah.
I mean, it was getting there.
Yeah.
Hmm.
So, anyway, my point, though, is not so that important for the United States necessarily to always be the superpower.
And the world's policemen.
And the world's policemen and so forth.
We take on that role and we're not even invited to do that. But yeah.
I mean, I'm glad we step up and take that role because, like I said, I think fundamentally within our culture that we are very moral people. You know,
mm-hmm.
our people perhaps more than our government, at least from an outside facing standpoint. But I do believe that.
Well, one of the things I was going to talk about that the weak dollar, you know, our poor dollar right now is just being battered everywhere.
Just needs to hit the gym, man. Hit the weights.
Oh, my God, the poor dollar. I've heard of people say that if the U.S. Is weak in terms of its economy, that much of the rest of the world is weak because we're such a global everything is so global and so codependent anymore.
Absolutely. It's all wound up in the same thing. When our financial markets go down, the international financial markets go down.
Right. And so 2008 is not starting off so well, as you mentioned.
No, it's not.
I hate to be a big downer here, but I mean, Chuck Schumer, the congressman out of New York, said that America's economy is in worse shape in middle class to its most uncertain since 9/11. Just look back, just some of the indicators, the tepid holiday sales for retailers, the subprime disaster has now forced investment firms to go overseas looking for handouts of billions of dollars of foreign investment.
Huh.
Inflation, we've got high prices on everything from gas, heating oil, wheat, flour, soybeans, corn, milk. The weak dollar, the Iraq war continues even though the surge is working. What does that mean? We're going to be there till 2018 because the surge is
mm-hmm.
working. The presidential primaries right now are a lot of, you know, mixed bag for both Democrats and Republicans. And so the government, and so the R word, I mean, have you heard that every other show now is the R word, you know, are we in a recession? Supposedly it takes six straight months of declining GDP output, and then all we've experienced is a slowdown in growth for 1 month, nowhere near a decline in output yet. But I think we don't realize how bad it is. I remember the last recession. I mean, we've gone through one at least since our memory.
I think we've gone definitely more than one. We've gone on quite a few. I think they're just not.
But
they're recognized. They're recognized after the fact.
Well, yeah, you have to be in one before. But it does, if this is the classic definition, it has to be six straight months of declining GDP. It can be measured.
Right.
So, yeah, maybe you don't realize you're in for 1 month, but you're going to realize it after 6 months. So the government, you know, is going to stimulate the economy with a new stimulus package of tax relief. You know, what are you going to do with your $300 check?
God.
Do you believe that?
Yeah.
And,
is that what the plan is?
That is one of the things you're talking about, $300 to individuals and $600 or $800 to families of a tax
rebate. There are some people that really believe that work.
Yeah, because the idea is, well, Bernanke says go out and spend it,
because
that'll help. And the Fed's going to keep lowering interest rates. And
isn't that like fake spending, though?
I know. It seems to be, doesn't it? Don't you think people should be saving?
It's almost like when Bush, after 9/11 happened, said go out and buy.
Yeah.
It seems fake. It's like, shouldn't we let people do what they want to do and build an economy that makes that work instead of forcing you to buy so that we don't go into decline?
Yeah, I mean, we have an incredibly high deficit right now, a trade deficit, debt. I mean, why would we do? I don't know. Yeah, but anyhow, that's what...
It can't be... The most creative minds must not be. I think of all the think tank economists and all the great institutions of learning, and I can't believe that they would come up with, yeah, let's just give them some money.
But that's what Bush came out with this week, $125 million, right, to give back to everybody. And there's going to be possible heating subsidies, extended unemployment insurance. The idea is just to get everybody spending again. So, yeah, it's not starting out so well.
I mean, look, I don't discount that that may be part of a five-point
plan.
Program.
Right.
You know, but I hope that's not the only point on the program, because it doesn't signify very deep thoughts on this at all.
But, you know, all the major Democrats are running, you know, for president are recommending some version of it. You know, Hillary wants to freeze foreclosures for 90 days, and they're all talking some kind of tax relief for businesses and individuals, too.
Yeah.
So we'll see what happens. But, you know, you won't see a check before summer, if anything, if this does happen.
I already spent it.
Oh, there's your vacation. But with the weak dollar, did you hear that America is now the world's discount store?
We are the world's Walmart.
We are the world's discount store because our prices are so low now because the dollar is so weak against global currencies that many, many people, including middle class people, not just the well-to-do, are coming to the United States from other countries, primarily Britain, Europe, Iceland, Korea, and Canada. They are making jaunts to the United States purely for the purpose of buying our goods.
Can't they just buy them online?
No, I don't think so. You can't really buy online I guess you could and ship FedEx, but wouldn't there be...
I don't know.
Why would they not do that? Why would they not go to Tumi? For example, there's an upsurge in luggage this year, a 30% increase in luggage sales because of all the foreign travelers coming to the United States to buy goods and take them home.
Wow.
I thought that was pretty amazing.
So, okay, can I insert a tip here? Mm-hmm, this is a helpful tip from Jeff, but learned from his mother again.
Uh-huh.
When you travel and you just want luggage to haul stuff back, go to any Salvation Army.
No, that's a good idea.
And buy a $2 suitcases.
That's
they're huge.
You don't think
plentiful.
They should have gone to the Tumi store in New York City and bought full price Tumi?
Makes no sense.
Well,
plus if you have a $2 one, you can if you're taking it one way, you can just dispose it.
That's right.
You know?
That's a really good point.
Yeah. So that's the easiest way to do that.
So all these stores that they interviewed for this article that they actually have said that spending is unbelievable. They see different shopping patterns. Like Saks Fifth Avenue said that Europeans come here and they buy UGG boots, which were hip here in 2004, you know, 4 years ago, a pair of UGG boots from Australia.
Yeah.
But now they're coming to buy that. And that Asians come here to go for the highest end luxury brands. That's probably why. You can't buy those online. You have to buy them at retailers.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's probably why.
Why wouldn't they be online, though?
Because they don't want... Why would you carry it in your store if you could buy it online? You compete. Just like we don't sell online. The company I work for, we sell to mom and pops. And if we sold online, we'd be competing with the people who distribute our goods.
Okay.
So, yeah, you can't... For the most part, I don't think you can buy luxury
Why don't those retailers then go online? Because they're not competing with the...
Most of them do have online. Sure, they have Saks online. You can... But I'm not sure why they wouldn't do that. That's a good point. Maybe they want to come here and get the experience of buying in the United States.
Well, maybe the travel here is cheap too, you know.
They are saying that there's
and it's an opportunity to sort of travel as well.
You can fly on Iceland Air directly to the Mall of America.
Wow.
And each person who's doing that now is spending $2,500 at the Mall of America. So it's not just for upper class people anymore who are coming here. It's definitely exploded into the masses.
How about that?
Isn't that amazing? Well, it's because the euro was at what, almost $1.50.
I don't track it, so.
And the euro was started out 1-to-1 with the U.S. dollar. It's now almost at $1.50, and the pound is at $2.
Yeah.
So I mean, it's really a bargain if you are these folks from these other countries. So
yeah.
America is the discount store, so come on over and keep buying and keep us afloat.
I was gonna
we're
say,
having trouble.
Why do we need to buy then? It sounds like it's kind of naturally going to take care of itself.
It does, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like it naturally goes to an equilibrium of some sort.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, you know, I know we all panic about our recessions, and I don't like to see my retirement money, you know, dip down 10% in a month. I mean, but it doesn't. I don't sweat that much about it either
because it's, it evens out over 20 years.
We always have recessions.
It's a business cycle.
I mean, I don't worry about the investments. I actually worry about my job more than I do recessions. I mean, than investments.
Right.
But we always have recessions. It's all part of the.
It is part of the business cycle.
I mean, I
all those economists who study economy, you know, it goes up, it goes down, it goes up, it goes down. It's just the extent of how far down does it go.
Right.
I think we'd like to kind of curb it.
We like to curb it. Sure. Mm-hmm. Sure. Sure.
Before it gets too bad.
Before it gets crazy and, you know, we're all killing each other in the streets for food, for cat food. All right. Well, I wanted to make a continuation of something that we talked about last time. A friend of mine found this for me. Men reveal their top kissing tips.
Oh, jeez.
I promise. This will be the last time we talk about kissing.
It is such a fun topic to talk about on a podcast.
I know. This was written. I actually haven't even read it yet, so I'm reading it for the first time now, too. Use these 10 tips to make sure you always leave her begging for more.
Okay,
and,
guys.
And I'm going to read these tips, and you have to tell me if they've been applied to you and how they make you feel. All right, number 10 is do it in private. Privacy is key. A big mistake that too many guys make is going for a kiss in the wrong situation. Women want that first kiss to be special, and they'd prefer to share the moment with you and you alone. So if you're out somewhere social and you feel like the time is right, take her to the coat room, or even better, to a completely different, more personal location.
They're talking about a first kiss?
It sounds like they're talking about the first kiss here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Number 9, no one to pull out. There's no better way to let her know you're a catch than by being the first to call it quits. Most guys go for the gold on the first kiss, and they rarely end up getting it. By being the one to slow down, you'll show her that you're in control, and most importantly, you'll leave her dying for more. Number 8, feel her out. I don't think that's what they meant.
That's not written so
no.
well. Okay.
When you feel the moment is right, reach over and touch her hair while you're talking and make a comment like, say, your hair looks so soft. That sounds dorky. And light. And what's she going to say? Yeah, it's called hair. What were you expecting? Bone?
I use a lot of product. Would you like me to go through my routine?
And lightly touch the tips of it. If she smiles, reach back and start stroking it again. But this time, shift your glance between her lips and her eyes a couple of times. If she lets you keep touching her hair, you know she's ready to be kissed. So dorky. These are dorky. Number 7, be a tease. Newsflash, there's nothing that women love more than to be teased. So let her know who's in control by driving her crazy with your lips. Go in like you're going to kiss her. Then at the very last second, pull away and flash her a mischievous grin. Use this sparingly to keep her turned on and on her toes.
I was going
to
say, the second time she might just walk away. You might be out of luck.
Yeah, I think so. It sounds playful if you use it in very small discretion. All right, these are a little. Let me see if there's anything interesting. Ease into it, show some passion, dip her down. Yeah, I don't know who reads that, and I don't know who writes this stuff. Because it's like,
what is the source of this fine article?
I don't even. I think it was one of the.
Was it Cosmo, perhaps?
USA Glamour? Today or CNN or Glamour? Something.
And who's it written by? A psychologist?
Dip her down. Listen to this. If the mood is right, add some sensuality and chivalry to your first kiss by gently dipping her down ballroom style. That's
oh boy,
kinda
you
weird.
Better know how much she weighs, right?
Yeah.
Oh.
Use your hands. Women love to be caressed, especially while they're being kissed. Start above her ear. Run your fingers down her hair, down her neck, and all the way down her back.
I don't know on a first kiss. Yeah, you might be more focused on just trying to make some contact with the lips and seeing if that goes well.
Yeah. Number two is spice it up, and they're basically saying kiss with a little bit of variety, which is kind of what the theme was
That
of
was
last
definitely
time.
The theme of last
time. Yeah. Number one, explore her body, kiss around her neck, and move your lips. Yeah, that's not a first kiss.
No, that's so not a first kiss.
Yeah.
Don't go anywhere. I mean, she might not like you, for God's sakes. It might be a sucky kiss, and she wants to get the hell out of there.
I know.
So we talked a little bit about, the presidential election that's going on now.
Is there something going on?
I think there might be.
It hasn't been that big going on in perpetuity.
We do have one of the longest running. I mean, it's getting a lot longer. And what happened to Giuliani? Wow. Well, anyhow.
Yeah.
So because this will probably be...
I'm glad to see... I don't think Giuliani's a bad man, but I'm glad to see that his saying 9/11 all the time isn't getting them anywhere. It just seemed like if that works, we're really dumb.
I know. We are really dumb. Yeah. And what about Bloomberg? A lot of rumors swirling around Bloomberg. So anyhow...
Don't you get a sense, though, that the Republicans...
Are dazed and confused.
Well, not only that, but they're probably going to come into the primary in the summertime without a candidate and with everybody with some support. So a Bloomberg could potentially come in and unite them.
Yeah. Somebody said, what if he throws $1 billion at it?
I know.
Could he buy votes?
Yeah.
Who knows? I know. He could give each of us a $5 tax rebate for Woo-hoo! Our vote.
Yeah.
So I just thought before Super Tuesday, which everybody's really saying that we'll know who the nominees are after Super Tuesday. You know,
yeah.
For the most part,
we'll
because there's so many.
There's so many.
So why don't we just predict who we think the nominees are going to be?
All right.
Okay. Well, I'm going to go with, I think it's going to be Clinton and Romney. But I think I would find it more interesting if it was Obama and McCain.
I think it'll be Hillary and McCain. And I'm a little bit iffy about McCain. I mean, I think he's the best candidate over on that side.
I think he's got the best integrity of
all
of them.
Yeah, I think he's the best candidate. And,
But all of the candidates, all four of them that are still seriously left that they're talking about, have something missing, and that's why the Republicans, are, at least from all what I've heard, is that that's why they're having such a hard time, is that there's some major flaw with all of them.
Right.
And if you could just sort of combine them and put them together and get one super candidate, then everybody would be pleased. But now they're just really struggling.
But I mean, what's great about Mitt Romney? I've never seen anything great about him. Except he looks presidential.
He looks presidential, and supposedly he's been a governor, and most of our presidents have been governors.
Okay.
Most of them have. I mean, it's been like 40 years since it's been somebody who's not been a governor.
So I think Hillary will win, but you know what? The more I read about this stuff, the more I'm actually leaning towards Obama. I think it'd be cool. I think, especially from an outward-facing
Yeah, have you
standpoint.
You heard what the overall comment is? What would the world say if we went from a George Bush to a black man running our country who has relatively little experience? Do you know he actually took office in January 2005?
Right.
January 2005. Yeah. That is, honestly, what can you do? So the criticisms about lack of experience, I think, are somewhat valid. But then again,
I don't see how it'll affect his job, though. I mean, all these, even the people who came with experience, you know, when they write about their experience, they say, nothing ever prepares you for this job.
Oh, well, that
you know, they all say that.
Yeah.
He's a bright guy.
Yeah.
I think it is key to get advisors who know things around you.
Surround yourself with smart
people. Surround yourself with really smart people.
Mm-hmm. And people you can bring together. You know, if he can be unifying.
And the reason I like Obama, I'm leaning towards him because he's clearly a smart guy. He's clearly articulate. But... since I've been an adult, maybe since Reagan, he's the guy that people keep saying, my God, I want to, he inspires people.
Yeah.
And to me, that's what a leader is. And then, and then he hires smart people to run things and to work with him to define policy.
Right.
But ultimately, and Hillary would be great at all the policy working. She's done it before. She knows what she's doing. And she's very smart. But she's never going to be inspiring, just like George W. Bush is never inspiring. They have their moments.
Right. Well, he's the one you want to have a beer with, and I think we've all realized that's not a great that is so not what you want to use as your criteria to elect a president, is I want to have a beer with him.
Right.
So anyhow, all right. Well, we'll see who wins then.
Yeah. So you think it'll be Romney, huh?
I think it'll be Romney. I think he's ultimately going to. He fits the profile, I think, more than
the only problem with that is he has the religion thing.
Yeah, he's got the religion factor. Yeah, no, you're right. See, they've all got a.
I know they all got something, a problem. Right?
Yep.
Well, I wanted to, before we leave, we're just about done here. I did want to comment about that Bobby Fischer just passed away.
Yes, he did.
And
a strange character he was. he was a strange dude, wasn't he?
This was a very strange character. In the New York Times, he's actually the second most searched item in the New York Times.
Right now, yeah. Everybody
wants to read about him. I did find this very, very sweet. His last words, according to a friend that was there with him when he died, was, "Nothing soothes pain like human touch."
Hmm.
Which is something I would never have expected him to say.
That's right.
Came on fast and strong in the chess world, an expert when I was playing chess.
Hmm.
And probably one of the reasons I started playing chess in high school is because of him.
A lot of people say that.
Yeah.
That they...
It was such a big deal, you know.
It was a win for the Cold War.
A win for the Cold War, mm-hmm. 25, 30 years of Soviet domination in the world of chess, and he came in with such brilliance. In fact, I remember, because I was kind of geeky and getting into chess at the time, and I can't remember exactly, but I think that there is some game that he played prior to his big thing with Spassky, where he did a queen sacrifice. Now, you sacrifice a queen, that's a big deal. Queen is an important piece in chess.
Right.
And most people understand sacrificing in chess to gain position, to gain a win. His sacrifice was so non-intuitive that the chess world was like, what is he doing when they were watching this? 10 moves, 20 moves later, he realized the beauty of what he had, that the world had realized the beauty of what he had done.
Wow.
And I went through the analysis of that game, and I still didn't get it all and everything. But the point is, this guy is like looking
that far ahead,
with all the different combinations. And in that case, it's all about, in my day, we would sacrifice a queen if like the next move was checkmate, something really obvious, right?
Uh-huh.
So this guy was brilliant.
And that was, you're talking about his match against Kasparov, right?
That was against Boris Spassky.
Oh, I'm talking about the Kasparov is the one he won the Cold War, right?
No, that was Boris Spassky. No, he never played Kasparov, I don't believe.
Mm-hmm.
No? 1972, Cold War, the big thing was Spassky.
Hmm.
Oh, he did play Spassky again. But here's some quips about him. He was suspicious. So I've got a few little things about Bobby Fischer that I found were interesting. First of all, he was 64 years old when he died. He was a very paranoid person.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's kind of part of his weird thing. And I think he probably had some sort of mental illness. I don't know
what his problem was.
But he had kidney disease for a while, and he refused any kind of Western treatment because he thought it was all some big plot. And that's what led him to die in Iceland. Fischer declared in the hours after the 9/11 attack, "This is all wonderful news. I want to see the U.S. wiped out."
Yeah, he hated us, which was pretty amazing.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Yeah. Some more little fun facts. He died a bitter, unbalanced, and almost totally friendless man. He had a daughter, and apparently he was all right with the women. He did all right with the women, like this Japanese wife that he had, and who was the daughter of the daughter of some big chess person in Japan, because he spent the last 10 years of his life basically fleeing country to country because the U.S. was after him for tax evasion and things like that. And I don't want to say that I admire him because he sounds like he did a lot of bad things, but he's a very special place in my lifetime. Bobby Fischer's his passing away is a big deal.
Hmm.
And how does a life like that go so wrong?
And Suzanne Plouchette died today too.
Yes, she did. Mm. She played a mean chess game.
She did.
Man, when she and Bob would play chess in that bed scene, God, it was great. They always talk about, I wish we could play like Bobby Fischer. I wonder if I'll die in the same week that Bobby Fischer died. Well, no, that's sad. Suzette Plouchette passed away.
Mm-hmm. Well.
So, goodbye, Bobby.
Yeah.
Goodbye, Suzanne. And goodbye, our faithful listeners.
Yes, until next time.
Till we meet again. This is Jeff and...
Gretchen.
Signing off and bidding you farewell.
I do.
bidding you adieu. All right, Jeff, stop talking. Are we done?
Yes.
All right, she says we're done. Bye.